Hello and welcome to the Fossils Lab podcast, helping you to stay up to date with the fast-moving world of Formula One. Today we review the Spanish GP and talk about all the latest news. My name is Jan, and as ever, I'm with Fergal. Hello everyone to episode 196 of the Fastest Lap podcast. After a 1 week break, we are back and we've got plenty to talk about. First of all, the Spanish GP. It was actually quite shocking to only have three cars finishing on the leap on the lead lap, right?
Yeah, I mean the pace of the front runners were truly unleashed to that race, and I guess it was probably helped by the fact that a lot of the midfield were kind of caught up in their own stuff, whereas the front guys were in their own free air, really. But yeah, I mean, it just kind of highlighted once again, if we give us a reminder that we probably didn't need, and that we, you know, already realized that the gaps between the top teams and the midfield outfits are still, you know, massive and continuing to grow, really. So yeah, pretty, it's not really often you would see that, you know, that many cars getting lapped, but yeah, on this occasion it was just one of those races.
But somehow it's always Barcelona, or at least in my mind, when I think back through the years, even in the Red Bull days, it kind of always, the Barcelona track always split the field or spread the field out much more compared to other tracks, maybe because it is so aero-dependent, and then the better cars obviously have an even bigger advantage compared to the other teams. And of course this week, or with this GP, it was also helped by not having any safety car at all. But yeah, the advantage Mercedes had this weekend, and also turning around their tire troubles from the 70th anniversary GP, it was really astonishing to see. And not only are they fast now, they also are really, or at least you have to say at least, Lewis Hamilton was able to manage his tires brilliantly. And really great race by Hamilton, and also by Verstappen, you must say, if you compare him again to his teammate and where the other Red Bull finished.
Yeah, again, it was I guess the performances that you probably would have expected from Hamilton and Verstappen out in front. And yeah, ultimately the Red Bull just didn't have the pace to keep up with Mercedes, and yeah, it made it a lot easier for Hamilton to take home that win. And yeah, Verstappen, I mean, I think he kind of understood pretty early on that second was probably the best that he could have hoped for. So yeah, I mean, not what Red Bull, I think, wanted to see, but yeah, I guess it probably came as not much of a surprise for them. And they'll be hoping they can get back on top of that and on top of Mercedes as soon as possible. But you know, Mercedes have just been so formidable over the last six years, I guess. So yeah, just a really, really strong team that really doesn't look like being beaten at the moment.
Yeah, and all in all, you have to say it wasn't the most spectacular GP ever. But, well, the race was mainly dominated by time management and strategy. And again, we heard some interesting conversation between Sebastian Vettel and the Ferrari team. And yeah, you really have to question what is going on in that team. I mean, the communication between team and drivers, of course, during the race, it's always like not easy to keep a cool head, especially when you're racing in, I don't know, over 30 degrees air temperature. But yeah, it kind of seemed again like Vettel had to do his own math and strategy to get out on top, and yeah, didn't really paint a, a good picture on Ferrari again.
No, definitely not. I mean, it was a very questionable strategy from Ferrari for Vettel. And, you know, he did a great job, Vettel, especially in that final stint going, well, like 37 laps on the soft tire. Yeah, pretty incredible. So, and still to finish, was it P7 he finished? So, yeah, I mean, a really spectacular job from him in the midst of, yeah, just Ferrari at almost their worst, or the worst that they've been in quite some time. You know, it's not even the performances, it's, God, the pit wall stuff has just been atrocious consistently over the last number of years. And you know, Vettel was unhappy with strategy calls at Silverstone, and he was very unhappy with the calls in Barcelona. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you gotta take your hat off to him for only dropping those two positions at the end of the race to his rivals. You know, I thought that he would drop off completely and really, you know, fall out of the points. But yeah, he held on really well with very worn tires. So yeah, I guess it shows the mark of a experienced champion, which I think many people sometimes maybe seem to forget about Vettel, forget what he's achieved and you know, what he's come through and battled through in F1. So yeah, a great drive from him, but just a shambles all around from Ferrari, really.
Yeah, also with Leclerc's race, reliability issues with the engine or electronics just shutting off, and then yeah, that was a weird story of him going around like, or doing two laps without actually having the seatbelt fastened. I don't think it was completely loose, but at least not fully attached. And yeah, he was also asking the team to prepare like something to fix the seatbelt issue, and yeah, the team obviously wasn't ready. So also not the best day in terms of communication for Leclerc's side.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty shocking, really, the fact that he drove around with seatbelts, with no seatbelt or a seatbelt not completely attached for like two laps. I mean, that's kind of unacceptable, really. Yeah, I haven't heard the full team communication on that, and you know who it came down to. But you know, that's extraordinarily dangerous, especially after he already had a failure in the car. I mean, what if something had happened again and it caused him to go off and crash the car? And, you know, if he didn't have his seatbelt completely fastened in, that's, yeah, that's extremely, extremely dangerous. So, yeah, just a really poor weekend from Ferrari. No, no clear signs, I guess, that they're on the up and on the improvement. But, yeah, it's just very difficult to watch, I guess, considering that last year they were actually, you know, winning races on a couple of occasions and fighting for pole positions. So yeah, it kind of seems like the jump down the field has, you know, been massive this year. And I know there's a lot of people that will be hoping that they turn that around very soon, but yeah, it just seems like the extent of those troubles, it's far beyond a quick fix. I think they even know that.
Yeah, I think so. I think so too. On the other hand, Racing Point with a really good finish in Barcelona, finishing P4 and P5 with Stroll and Perez. Although you must say it kind of seems like we will get reprimands for the Racing Point cars after every Grand Prix now. And I think we haven't talked about the Racing Point story or about the decision of that fully on the podcast. I think we talked about the that Renault launched a protest, but we weren't sure whether that will lead to anything, especially after the FIA said they looked at the building process and they thought it was okay But yeah, they actually, the FIA decided that those brake ducts are not, well, they are not illegal in terms of the technical regulations, but they broke the sporting regulations and they deducted 15 points off Racing Point and fined them with €400,000. First of all, Fergal, what's your thoughts on the decision?
I mean, to be honest, I don't really have much of thoughts on this. I'm not, I'm not in that situation. I'm not a deciding factor. I'm not a steward to make those decisions. So, to be honest, I don't really know if that's a lenient penalty or a severe penalty. And now, obviously, Racing Point think it's too severe, and a group of other teams think it's too lenient. So that battle is still going on despite the settlement. I guess, you know, Racing Point could, I mean, yeah, 400,000 is a lot of money. Yeah, and especially for a team like Racing Point that wouldn't have the bigger budgets compared to you know, Mercedes, Red Bull, Ferrari. And then yeah, the points reduction, you know, I don't know how severe that actually is for them. You know, the 15 points if they lose you know, out on positions at the end of the year because of those 15 points, then I guess it will be a bigger deal to them. But yeah, I mean, it is what it is. I don't really have too much thoughts on it, but I think the clear thing is that it's far from over. But yeah, like you said, they weren't necessarily illegal, but it was more of the process of how they went about them was against the rules, with the parts becoming listed over the course of the last year. And I mean, there's all sorts of allegations and accusations coming out of some people's mouths right now. So despite the settlement, it's definitely not a closed book. And it will be a pretty, there'll be a lot more headline stories, I imagine, before the end of the season, with the Racing Point breaks. But as of now, I couldn't really tell which way the stewards or judges will decide on the case, because it is very complex. And it'll definitely be really interesting to see how it pans out. But it will have big ramifications for rival teams, which I think is why some of these teams are pursuing it so hastily.
Yeah, and it's also going to be interesting to find out what Mercedes' role in the whole process actually was, because I don't know whether you can confirm that or not, but while scrolling through some F1 news in the last couple of weeks, I read one headline, but I didn't really investigated further, saying that Toto Wolff actually confirmed that one team 3D scanned the car from 2019. I mean, would be pretty obvious to think of Racing Point being that team, but can you confirm that he actually said that? Do you know that?
I haven't heard that, but you know, it's, I think you want to be very careful with what things are being said, because yeah, this it's quite a serious thing. You know, this could go to courts, you know, law and all that comes into it. So I think accusations and you know, there was a team founder, let's say, who was in the news yesterday and today over information that he was told regarding Mercedes' involvement in this, and how they had a car, a Racing Point basically had a car to copy from Mercedes. So some really big accusations going on. And I guess I thought at this stage of the whole thing it would all be wrapped up, but it seems like there's more ahead of us to the story rather than behind us.
Yeah, this could be a really, really big story, especially when you put the pieces together and Of course, there's nothing confirmed, and maybe some a lot of rumors going around, but that also Toto Wolff will not continue with Mercedes. Will he continue with Aston Martin in a bigger role? And maybe then it wouldn't be so bad to have a 3D print of the Mercedes. Who knows? It's just speculation, rumor. But just imagine if that actually came true, what a story that would be.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, on that about Toto Wolff and Mercedes, I guess in Spain it kind of seemed like for the first time he gave the biggest sort of hint that he might actually leave Mercedes. You know, he confirmed that he was evaluating his future with the team. And you know, I guess it would kind of make sense for him to leave now when, you know, what else is there really for him to achieve? He's, you know, headed this Mercedes organization for, eight years now. So, you know, he's been there a long time, and the success that they've had has been, you know, unprecedented in F1, especially in the modern era. I mean, I wouldn't be at all surprised, I think, if Toto Wolff actually did leave Mercedes, but nevertheless, that would still be massive, massive news. But I mean, what are we now? We're August. I guess in the next month or two, we could have some more concrete stuff on that. You know, Mercedes have already, of course, signed up Bottas for next year. That wasn't really a surprise. They'll probably announce Hamilton at some stage. You know, Hamilton won't be going anywhere. So, it would be very interesting to see how the team would work without Toto Wolff, and I guess who would step up to that role. But who knows? I guess lots more stories involving Mercedes, you could say, to come in the next month or two.
Yeah, and also a Mercedes engine story. We can talk about that in a minute, but before we do that, let's quickly do our our rating of the GP. As I said, it wasn't the most spectacular one. It wasn't the most boring GP either, so I'm going to give it a 4 out of 10. How would you rate it?
Yep, for once I agree with you in this one. And I mean, it wasn't a very good race. I mean, the only, I guess, well, there was a bit of racing in the midfield, but you know, up at the front at the start of the race, it was for the first few laps, maybe it was a little bit hopeful with Verstappen sticking quite close to Hamilton, but you know, Hamilton was just kind of holding back, and he was, you know, uncontested really on his way to the win. So 4 out of 10 for me too.
And in terms of driver of the weekend, it's a bit difficult, as there was, for me at least, there wasn't like a big standout performance like we had in other races. So I'm having to go with the boring choice, and from my side it's Lewis Hamilton as a driver of the weekend, as he managed his tires perfectly, converted the strategy into a race win, into pole position. So the driver of the weekend for me.
Yeah, I mean, of course it was a great job from him, but I'm actually going to go for Lance Stroll on this one. I don't actually have the results in front of me, but I don't think he had qualified Perez on the Saturday, if I remember. Maybe, I don't know if I'm getting that wrong, but I can't remember. But, you know, on the race on Sunday, he once again got a great start off the line, and, you know, didn't shy away down at turn one, going wheel to wheel with Bottas on that really tight line into turn one, and held P3 for a few laps before, you know, inevitably Bottas got back past him with a much faster car. But then, yeah, switched on to a two stop and then came back to get P4. Of course, that P4 was helped by the fact that Perez had a time penalty. And you know, Perez is another probably runner up, you could say, for my runner up for driver of the weekend.
Did you actually see the replay and or onboard of Hamilton why Perez got the blue flag penalty?
I did not, no.
I saw it, and you have to say it was a deserved penalty. Perez basically didn't move out of the way for a whole lap.
Yeah, but I mean, nevertheless, you know, that aside, going, you know, I guess crossing the line in P4 on a one-stop strategy, you know, is a great achievement for him, and not really surprising. We've seen Perez do these kind of drives time and time again, but yeah, I was really impressed with Stroll, and I think this is by far the best version of Lance Stroll we've seen. You know, he's really, really stepped up his game this year. He's not been steamrolled or dominated by Perez in any shape or form. He is, I think he's like P5 in the standings. Of course, Perez did miss two races, but you know, he's done I don't think anybody can deny that he's doing a good job this year. So yeah, I think, and I was just really impressed with him in Barcelona. So yeah, Stroll, my driver of the weekend.
I have to agree. I'm also impressed by Stroll's performances this year, and I just checked in qualifying, he was 1/10 behind Perez. So yeah, but in race pace, I think we've seen good starts of Stroll in 2018 and 2019 already. But yeah, also now with race pace and awareness in races and his qualifying pace, yeah, he's becoming a better and better driver. And you always have to keep in mind that he is still a very, very young driver. So yeah, I'm also impressed by his performances, I have to say. So yeah, that's for the Spanish GP. And one topic we still need to talk about before we end the episode is the power modes and engine mode settings the FIA will probably, I don't think there has been official confirmation of that yet, will probably introduce a technical directive that Formula One engine manufacturers and teams will have to use one engine mode and power unit mode for qualifying and the race. The official explanation is that the FIA cannot, with their personnel, they cannot understand what the teams are doing with all their different power modes, and they can't really police whether they are in or complying with the regulations. So they want all engine manufacturers to run one engine mode, and they want to understand that in detail. But of course, other people are saying it's to hamper Mercedes, as they probably have the biggest qualifying boost in their engines. What do you think? What's the reason behind that is, Fogel?
Yeah, it's probably a bit of both. Maybe more so for the latter reason that you mentioned, because I mean, it hasn't really been an issue up to this point. But I kind of see it from both sides. I don't really like how, you know, when innovative stuff gets introduced in F1, you know, the FAA just moves to ban it, like DAS, you know, banned next year. But it just seems that all these, you know, advantages and innovations of recent years have come from Mercedes, who is already the best team on the grid. So yeah, from a fan perspective, I mean, if it helps close up the field a little bit, especially at the front of the grid, then, you know, it's a good thing, because you know, I respect Mercedes, and I, you know, love the engineering work, and I appreciate that. But I think it's getting to a stage now where it's just becoming a little bit, it's just having a little bit of a strain. And, you know, this dominance has just gone on for a little bit too long, I think. You know, it's all credit to Mercedes, like I said, but, you know, we need competition. We need more than two drivers winning races on a consistent basis. It's just not enjoyable, full stop, to watch. You know, it's, unless you're a Hamilton fan, I guess. But yeah, whether it will do much or not remains to be seen. But yeah, it's kind of, it's not strange, but there does seem to be this sort of thing where the FAA would just ban things when a team pulls a bit of an advantage, and I guess that's because they want a fairer playing field, you know, for everybody, but the field is just so spread out right now, it's very difficult to achieve that, and that's of course what the new regulations coming in 2022 aim to do. It would be in the next few months if it wasn't for the whole coronavirus situation, but I guess I'm more support it than I am against it, but I can definitely see why people would be against such a ruling.
Yeah, I kind of have the fear that, well, looking at the reliability of all the different engine manufacturers, you kind of think Mercedes also is on top of the list in terms of reliability. Of course, last year, I think it was, they had some issues with a newer version of their engine. I think they introduced that in a Spa where some where customer teams with Williams and also Hamilton, I think they had some issues. But other than that, you can't really think of many Mercedes power unit issues. And now when they have to run one mode, it basically means you need to select the highest mode you can run in the race without compromising your reliability and still go fast in qualifying. And with Mercedes probably having the highest reliability, they can probably also run the highest engine mode. So I kind of fear that this decision to ban different engine modes might backfire, but who knows actually what will come out of that.
Yeah, like I said, it's difficult to know exactly what will come out of that. But I mean, Red Bull have already said that, and I'm not sure if Ferrari said it as well, but that, you know, it's only good news for them. So it would be nice to just have more competition at the front. You know, Mercedes aren't going to like that, but I think fans of Formula One have a right to. And you know, me at this moment in time speaking as a fan, it's, you know, I'm pretty sick of seeing Mercedes dominate. I'm happy to see them win. I have no problem seeing them win, but if there was just a more competition so that races and championships were more exciting, you know, I think that's what everybody wants. And if this is a way to help achieve that, then, you know, great. But if not, then, you know, it kind of just shows just how much of an advantage that Mercedes actually does have over the rest of the field.
Yep, absolutely. So with that in mind, we will have 1 week of a break now after 3 races in a row. And then we will head to Belgium, or the Formula One circus will head to Belgium for the Belgian GP. And that's going to happen in around 2 weeks' time. But we'll be back next week. Until then, goodbye.
Goodbye.